countermeasure, what do we expect to happen? Number 5, when can we go and see what we have learned from taking that step? As soon as possible. Today is not too soon. How about we go and take that step now? Strive for rapid cycles. In most cases, we have been striving to do this at each focus process at least once per shift. The purpose of a coaching cycle is to allow the coach to quickly grasp the current condition in both the process being improved and the mentee so that the coach can judge what is an appropriate next step, to provide a routine for conditioning training, to recognize the mentee's efforts. With practice and experience, one coaching cycle should not take very long. Novice coaches sometimes mistakenly let the cycle get into lengthy discussions that cover many different factors and can run into hours. I've been shooting for 15 minutes per coaching cycle in many cases. As soon as a single next step, not a list of steps, is clear to both mentor and mentee, then the coaching cycle is over. As in the mentor-mentee case example, the next step can and often should be very small. That is perfectly acceptable as long as the cycles are rapid. A coaching cycle is not all there is to coaching, of course. Get through the 5 questions one time relatively quickly and take stock. What is the situation now? Where are we in the improvement kata, in the process being improved, and in the development of this person's capabilities? What is needed next? After a coaching cycle, the mentor can then, for example, decide whether he should stay on with the mentee during the next step, to observe and provide guidance, as Tina did in the mentor-mentee case example in Chapter 8, or return later for a check by means of another coaching cycle. The next coaching cycle should follow as soon as possible, often within hours or even minutes on the same day. If the next step can be taken right away, then by all means do that. A few lessons learned about coaching cycles. It is a good idea to limit a student's first few target conditions to a time horizon of only 1 week. This way, the student can get more experience with the entire improvement kata, experience some success, and begin to develop a rhythm. After some practice, you can begin to lengthen the target condition horizon a bit to, say, 1 to 4 weeks out. Do not wait until the end of a shift to conduct coaching cycles. Think of a check as a beginning, not an end, and do it early in the workday if possible. You can specify the time of day as part of a coaching target condition. If we're always putting off coaching cycles until the end of the workday, it suggests the lack of a specific coaching target condition and a low level of priority. Whenever you approach any process, go through the 5 questions. In this manner, you will not only be teaching others the way of thinking, but you will be teaching yourself as well. The 5th question, when can we go and see what we have learned from taking that step, has been a sticking point. New coaches often ask this question thinking that the next step must be a countermeasure or solution. Likewise, the mentee often thinks this is what the coach wants. In many, or even most, cases, however, the next step is just to get a deeper grasp of the situation, as was illustrated in the case example in Chapter 8. Another lesson is to coach only one target condition at a time, which generally means one mentee at a time. If you try to coach several mentees at once, the dialogue tends to become too general and mentees may become less open about discussing problems. Every mentee is potentially in a unique situation and usually has unique development needs. Sense of achievement. Developing a new mindset often involves periodically deriving a feeling of success from practicing the behavior patterns. While we may think that success only comes at the end of something, there are important opportunities for positive reinforcement at all stages of the improvement kata. These opportunities should be utilized, since the objective is not just solutions, but building the capability to follow the improvement kata routine, to understand situations, and develop appropriate solutions. Making a plan. Once the advanced group has spent a few months learning by applying the improvement kata at some processes, there will be a need for a plan to begin wider development of improvement kata behavior. The time horizon for such a first plan should not exceed 12 months, since at this stage you are on a steep learning curve and your grasp of conditions is likely to change appreciably. Because of our limited experience, our flashlight does not shine very far ahead. Creating such a plan is the same as any A3 planning process as discussed at the end of Chapter 8. The advanced group needs a mentor to whom it will present its planning efforts iteratively in coaching cycles. In developing this plan, the group focuses on one section heading at a time, since one section sets the framework for the next. Until the plan is signed, however, it is acceptable to go back and make adjustments to prior sections. Much of the benefit of the plan lies in the iterative planning process, because it forces you to get facts and data and repeatedly think through, deeper and deeper each cycle, what you are doing. The objective is not just to have a plan, but to go through the step-by-step effort to create the plan. It takes time to develop this kind of plan, easily 2 months. Continue practicing the improvement kata and testing ideas while the plan is being developed, since this helps you stay close to the real situation. The following key points for this planning process are presented under their respective A3 headings. Number 1. Theme. The theme is to develop the behavior of managers and leaders toward a pattern that follows the improvement kata. However, be sure to keep the theme and activities linked to continuous improvement of production processes, since cost reduction via process improvement is the overall objective. We are not introducing the improvement kata for the sake of introducing the improvement kata. We should be improving processes and practicing, learning, the routine of the improvement kata simultaneously. As described in Chapter 3, Toyota's improvement kata functions within an overall sense of direction, which is provided by a long-term vision. Without this, you will find people going off in several directions when they hit obstacles. Thus, one of the first questions to ask yourself is, do we have consensus on a vision, that is, a long-term direction? I have witnessed several groups that went into long intellectual discussions about establishing a vision, and they typically ended up producing useless statements that protect several people's sacred cows. Developing a succinct, useful, but not overly confining long-term vision is difficult. It takes a considerable amount of time and reflection, and is not necessarily a democratic process. Also, if we are just beginners with understanding the potential of the improvement kata, then perhaps this is not yet the right time to be arguing about what might be an appropriate vision. But you do need a vision, and if you are a manufacturer, I see no reason why you should not simply adopt the same long-term vision for your production operations that Toyota strives for. One-piece flow at lowest possible cost. As we have seen in Chapter 3, this vision does not come from Toyota or Japan, and has been pursued for a few hundred years. Why not adopt this widely recognized production vision and get going? Number 2. Current condition. The advanced group has been gaining first-hand understanding of the current situation by trying to apply the improvement kata at the process level in the organization. Summarize what is being learned in bullet points. This summary should at least describe A. the current behavior of managers and leaders, and B. how process improvement is currently handled. You can also include any additional factors you would like. Some aspect or aspects of this description of the current condition should be measurable so that you can gauge if you are making progress. More on metrics later in this plan. Based on what the advanced group has learned by immersing itself in the current condition, it can then establish a target condition. Number 3. Target condition. What you are defining here is a condition you want to have in place at a future point in time, such as 6 or 12 months from now. Defining this takes some time and iterations because it should be based on facts and data and be specific and measurable. There are two aspects to the target condition in this section of the plan. Number 1, relative to process improvement activity. For example, total number of processes being managed and improved via the improvement kata. Measurable process improvement, such as process stability. Number 2, relative to leader coaching behavior. For example, what persons will have reached what capability level? What persons will be carrying out the improvement kata and the coaching kata? At what frequency and how many processes? How you intend to get to this target condition will be the subject of the next section of the plan. Keep in mind as you define the total number of processes that, because the improvement kata is an approach for daily management, once you begin with the improvement kata at a process, there is no end there. This means that, unlike improvement projects or workshops that have an end date, the number of processes being improved through the improvement kata accumulates and grows as you spread the approach to other processes. Do not overextend yourself at the start. At the beginning, it is better to have picked too few focus processes rather than too many. In establishing this target condition, something we do is describe levels of capability that we would like individuals to reach. We have often used these three levels. Level A, aware of it. Target condition, student is aware of the approach to continuous improvement and adaptation. Level I, able to do it. Target condition, student can do improvement kata. Level C, able to coach it. Target condition, student can do coaching kata. Starting from the first level, level A, awareness, means that the individual has a basic understanding of what the improvement kata is and how it works. Level I, improvement kata, means that the individual can effectively carry out the improvement kata. Level C, coaching kata, means that the individual can effectively carry out both the improvement kata and a coaching kata. Number 4. Moving from current condition to target condition. Once the advanced group has defined the target condition, it should involve persons from the next level in the organization, its mentees, in planning how to move from the current condition to the target condition. The advanced group should not finalize this part of the plan on its own. It is acceptable for mentors to set a target, and sometimes even a target condition, but the mentees should become involved in planning how to achieve that condition. Otherwise, it is akin to telling people what to do in traditional fashion. The overall idea in this part of the plan is for people to learn the improvement kata by repeatedly practicing its routine on real processes under the guidance of a coach. In terms of tactics, this part of the plan should specify the coaching cycles in detail. Who will practice when, where, and how? You might lay this out, for example, in monthly increments. In planning how to move from the current condition to the target condition, we often linked the three levels of capability with levels of training activity. Starting again, the training activity at level A is a classroom course with shop floor exercises. The purpose of this course is only to create a sense of awareness about what the improvement kata is. The next training level is to practice the improvement kata, which is called training level I. After a person has demonstrated sufficient capability to effectively carry out the improvement kata, this is a gate, they can move to the next level of training, C, where they practice the coaching kata. Moving from level I to level C is not a function of time or number of practices completed, but of demonstrated capability. Within the I and C capability levels, individuals will at any point in time, of course, have different skill levels. The three levels of training activity, or whatever levels you may define, can then provide a framework for specifying who will practice what, when, and how. As people move up in their level of experience, capability, and perspective, some of them teach and coach people in the next level. By coaching the next group, the higher level group can maintain a better sense of the actual situation, that is, people's true current capabilities. See Benefits of the Mentor-Mentee Approach in Chapter 8. Number 5. Metrics. It is important that we can measure our progress and, in particular, lack of progress. We learn the most from our mistakes. Currently, we use two categories of metrics. Number 1. One set of metrics has to do with coaching. These might be the start and stop times of coaching cycles. How many processes are coached? Who does the coaching? How often the coaching cycles take place? And whether the next step, question 5, was taken. However, it is entirely possible to fulfill a specified number of coaching cycles and have little to no improvement effect on the production process. Always bear in mind that the overarching objective is continual improvement of cost and quality performance at the process level. Number 2, therefore, you should monitor the relationship between coaching cycles, above, and a second set of metrics. To what degree the focus processes are being improved? Such improvement metrics are taken directly from the target conditions at the respective focus production processes. As mentioned earlier, if the coaching cycles, metric set 1, are being fulfilled as planned, but the improvement in the focus processes, metric set 2, are not being reached, then you need to take a closer look at how the coaching is being done. Also, think about and define how these numbers will be obtained. Ideally, this is done as simply as possible, with pencil and paper at the process. A good rule of thumb is that, if possible, you should go to the process to get the information you need. Ideally, the mentee does not bring metrics to the mentor's office. It is more like a pull system, if you will, whereby mentor and mentee go to the process to obtain the necessary facts and data there. Related to metrics, as part of their lean implementation efforts, many organizations have tried utilizing systems of point awards, or similar, to drive and assess progress. Be careful with such systems, since people often end up chasing points rather than a desired target condition. I tend to avoid such schemes. Problems arise when awards are linked to completion or implementation of activities, which is easy to measure, rather than to attainment of a level of personal competency or of target conditions, which, admittedly, is more difficult to measure. Levels should be awarded based on the student's demonstrated capability or achievement of target conditions, not on how many courses or practices have been completed or tools implemented. Include reflection times in the plan. Keep in mind that when you execute a plan and work toward a target condition, you will need to make adjustments based on what you are learning from the unforeseen obstacles and problems you discover along the way. This is one of the reasons we prepare a plan, so we can see what is going on as expected. The advance group should reflect regularly and make adjustments as necessary. Build this into your plan by scheduling advance group reflection times, for example, every 2 weeks. By conducting reflections, that is, PDCA checks as you work to develop improvement kata behavior across the organization, you will learn what you need to work on to achieve that behavior. You can conduct reflections in an uncomplicated fashion. Go through the 5 questions and record on a flip chart what is going as planned, positive, and what is not working or not going as expected, negative. The inputs for the reflection can come out of the more frequent coaching cycles, which are a kind of process metric. However, one lesson I have learned is to begin any reflection session with 1. A restatement of the overall theme, for example, to develop improvement kata behavior in the organization, and 2. A reiteration of why we experiment, in order to calibrate everyone's thinking before conducting the reflection. In a reflection, people may feel pressure and start defending why they were not able to complete a step as planned. This, of course, inhibits PDCA. It is useful to remind everyone that you are experimenting in order to see obstacles and to learn from them what you need to work on in order to achieve the target condition. You are not looking at individuals and evaluating them, and our success depends upon the reflection being a depersonalized, open, and data-based dialogue. One more point to reiterate for conducting reflections. We know that the improvement kata is scientific and that it works. If process improvement results are not as expected, then it is not the improvement kata that is faulty, but something in our coaching that is still incorrect. Practicing the improvement kata over and over should produce results. If they do not come, then something is wrong in our teaching. Common obstacles. In our experimentation, there have been many obstacles, many ahas, and many course corrections. Here are some common obstacles, just as an example. You will find more. It is hard for people to resist making a list of action items. The 5 key questions are often difficult for senior leaders to internalize. We like doing but not checking and adjusting. We jump into solutions and skip over careful observation and analysis. People do not understand Toyota-style coaching. Both mentor and mentee mistakenly believe that the mentee needs to figure out what solution the mentor has in mind. The unclear path to a target condition is uncomfortable for many people. People like a clear plan in advance, even though that is actually only a prediction. Iteration, redoing steps, is uncomfortable. People feel like they did something wrong when they are asked to look again or repeat a step, yet this is very important for learning and seeing deeply. Many people will view this effort as just another project, rather than as developing a new way of managing. At the start, it naturally seems like this effort means adding more work on top of daily management duties, as opposed to it being a different way of conducting daily management. At the start, coaching cycles often take too much time and thus become burdensome. Once a target condition has been established, a coaching cycle can often be completed in 15 minutes, less is more. As discussed earlier, rather than making a list of steps, just take one next step and then see where that takes you. Conduct your coaching cycle standing up at the process. Target condition information and process data will need to be at the process. And do not let them turn into endless talk sessions. Go through the five questions, find the next step, and that is then the end of the coaching cycle. Take the next step as soon as possible. Lifelong practicing. In this chapter, we have been talking about developing capabilities and behavior patterns, which, in Toyota's view, represent the strength of an organization. The ongoing challenge of Kata training is to strive for mastery and perfection, and even the most accomplished Toyota engineers, leaders, managers, and executives will say they are still working toward that goal. The sports metaphor is again appropriate here. Just like athletes, even advanced students and senior leaders will need to keep practicing the katas they learned as beginners under guidance of a coach. The never-ending need for improvement and evolution of our processes and products gives us the opportunity to keep honing our skills while working on actual issues and toward real target conditions. While doing so, we should listen to our coaches and others who may detect a bad habit. The elegant trick in this is that while you are practicing, you are also doing something real, always to the best of the current level of your abilities. This is an interesting way to manage continuous improvement and adaptation, and a fascinating way to manage an organization. Conclusion. We admire Toyota's ability to thrive in different environments and in changing, challenging conditions. Yet it is not necessarily a problem that organizations sometimes come and sometimes go. The economist Joseph Schumpeter saw this as a process of creative destruction and suggested that it accounts for a lot of the vitality in the most vibrant and dynamic economies on Earth. In the late 1980s, when I was starting to research how manufacturing companies can retain or regain competitiveness, a Buddhist colleague surprised me with an observation. He pointed out that by conducting that research and trying to assist manufacturers, it is possible that I was interfering with natural selection, artificially prolonging untenable situations, and thus, in the long run, perhaps even causing more rather than less suffering. Yet despite Mr. Schumpeter and my Buddhist colleague, I do find myself caring if an organization survives or not, and if your organization survives. This is not because I fear change or have a special affinity for the organization. It is because the unplanned decline or collapse of an organization suggests to me that we as humans were somehow unable to sense in a timely fashion what was happening, react appropriately, and adapt elegantly. I do not lament the loss of the organization so much as I regret the failure to use our human capability, our capability to keep adapting to its fullest extent. In fact, if we more fully use our capabilities to adapt, then there will be plenty of change as organizations keep intentionally modifying and evolving themselves, their products, and their services to suit dynamic conditions. With success, business organizations may shift too much of their focus away from serving customers and society to simply making money, trying to preserve a status quo, or maximizing short-term shareholder value. Consequently, it can become more likely that progress, through improvement and evolution of processes, product, or service, will occur outside these organizations. In contrast, Toyota's improvement kata helps keep an organization's attention on what it needs to do to continue improving and evolving how it provides value for customers and society. Financial targets and results are vital, of course, but for long-term organization survival, the question, how do we achieve those financial results, should often be preceded by the question, what do we need to do with our processes, product, or service in order to meet customer needs? In the space between these two questions lies much resourcefulness and creativity, which are available to any organization that has a kata that taps and channels those abilities. If we know and can master how to proceed through unclear territory, then we need not fear many of the challenges, changes, and unknowns we encounter in any of our endeavors. Rather than trying to hold on to what may be a false sense of certainty, which can lead to trouble because we then act with a mistaken sense of reality, we can learn a means for dealing with uncertainty. This is why I continued to study Toyota and why, as the research progressed and the findings became clearer, I decided to write this book. I hope that Toyota will stay with us long enough so that many of us, in business, education, politics, and daily living, can learn from this unique company about how we might better utilize our human capabilities. Thriving in the long term, the fundamental purpose of the Toyota organization is to me a sign of good concerted use, good management, of our human ability and potential. 6 years ago, I began the research that led to this book thinking, like just about everyone else, that the story was about techniques and other listable aspects of Toyota. Today, I see Toyota in a notably different light, as an organization defined primarily by the unique behavior routines it continually teaches to all its members. Due to the linear nature of the book format, some of my descriptions of the improvement kata are necessarily too mechanical, as compared with how this kata is utilized in every day's work at Toyota. Fortunately, the improvement kata, even as presented here, will readily accommodate reality. Toyota's improvement kata and coaching kata are largely invisible when we benchmark Toyota. Yet these two kata play perhaps the major role in Toyota's ability to achieve ambitious targets, keep improving, and adapt. I have worked with these kata extensively now, and I am intrigued by their capacity to help us move through the unpredictable paths ahead and achieve beyond what we can see. When you look behind the curtain at how Toyota manages itself, you realize that Toyota has achieved not only a commercial, but also an intellectual accomplishment. The response by business leaders when they learn about Toyota's improvement and coaching kata has been overwhelmingly, and even surprisingly, positive. As if it were something we have been waiting for. When skepticism is expressed, it tends to revolve around two thoughts. That the step-by-step improvement kata and coaching kata seem to proceed slowly, or that it will take a long time to develop such behavior patterns. In regard to the first comment, Toyota's approach may indeed appear slow, but in fact the continuous improvement and adaptation it generates is, in sum, both faster and more effective than our current approach of periodic attempts at improvement and adaptation. It is perhaps a classic example of the race between the tortoise and the hare. In regard to the second comment, I would agree that developing new behavior patterns across an organization involves a more far-reaching effort, and probably more time, than a supposedly quick-fix solution. But a quick fix does not alter the underlying management system, and, the conclusion is becoming unavoidable, some aspects of our prevailing management system need to be changed. Permanent pressure to adapt can keep an organization fit and healthy if it has a systematic way, a kata, of responding to that pressure. This book does not describe everything about Toyota, but it provides more than enough information and detail for you to begin developing, through experimentation and practice, your own continuous improvement system like Toyota's. You can even see your organization as part of human history through your efforts to bring continuous improvement and adaptation into it. This is because each step in that direction not only benefits your company, it also helps move our society forward because it mobilizes our capability. Does the way ahead for developing improvement kata behavior in your organization seem unclear? Are you unsure about what you will need to do to achieve successful cultural change? Well, that is exactly how it should be, and if so, I can assure you that you are already on the right track. We cannot know what the path ahead will be, but the improvement kata shows us a way to deal with, and perhaps even enjoy, that unpredictable aspect of life. That latter sentiment is my wish for all of us, and with that in mind, I will end with a question. What is your improvement kata? Appendix 1. Where do you start with the improvement kata? Ideally, every production process would have a target condition. Leaders would be able to check and mentor improvement activity by going from process to process daily, observing and asking the five questions at each stop. Certainly, no process in a production facility should operate without a defined standard that it is striving to achieve. However, it would be overwhelming and infeasible to begin by applying the improvement kata at many processes simultaneously. One common answer to the question of where to start is at the loop in the value stream with the greatest potential for improvement. Clearly, the stamping loop, with its 8 days of lead time, has greater improvement potential than the assembly loop, which generates only a half day of lead time. Many of us would logically begin in the stamping loop. As part of the research leading to this book, I studied how Toyota works with its suppliers. One thing I observed is that after Toyota supplier support personnel walk a value stream for some time, in order to gain a broad understanding of the overall situation, they usually began by focusing on the assembly loop of a value stream, even if it had far less inventory and lead time than the upstream loops. Toyota would most likely begin in the assembly loop. Why? In Toyota's way of thinking, the first place in the value stream to establish and drive toward a target condition is at the pacemaker process rather than at upstream fabrication processes. The pacemaker process, or loop, in a value stream is the set of downstream steps that are dedicated to a family of products and where that family of products is finished for the external customer. The external customer takt time applies to this process. Often this is an assembly process and its associated scheduling process. Note that a pacemaker process means something different than a bottleneck process, although they could by coincidence be the same process. Toyota tends to begin at the pacemaker loop because it occupies a critical position in a value stream and is worthy of special attention. Fluctuation and instability in the pacemaker loop can quickly affect the just downstream external customer, and simultaneously cause hard-to-follow, amplifying demand fluctuations for the upstream processes. I first came across this effect when I visited a plant and was told that the biggest problem was the upstream machining area. The assembly process could often not fulfill its production schedules because it was frequently running out of machined parts. Yet, when we got to the machining area, a few calculations revealed excess capacity there. The machining supervisor cleared things up when he said, "Yes, we have enough capacity here, but no one can expect us to keep up with assembly the way they constantly change their production schedule." At that point, we went back to assembly, in the pacemaker loop, and started taking a closer look there. Many problems in the upstream processes of a value stream actually have their origin in a poorly operated pacemaker loop. If the pacemaker is operating in an unstable or unleveled manner, it becomes difficult to discern where problems in the value stream are actually coming from. Problem solving and improvement are difficult. Toyota's improvement strategy here is to strive to develop a stable, leveled pacemaker process first, and then see what problems remain in the upstream processes and migrate there as needed. Sometimes, of course, you cannot start at the pacemaker loop because there is a showstopper problem at an upstream process. What Toyota often does in this situation is to fix this upstream problem quickly, within a few weeks at most, even by temporarily increasing inventory there, and then get back to concentrating on the pacemaker. A special focus on pacemaker processes, particularly at the start, may take some practice and extra effort to bring it into an organization. At one company I know, the vice president of manufacturing regularly visits the manufacturing facilities, a common practice for manufacturing VPs. Despite having been instructed on the pacemaker focus, plant managers would invariably want to walk the visiting VP through the factory to show all the improvements we have made. That is, to show scattered point improvements made at many places in the factory. To change this and get people more focused, it took the VP saying, "For the near future, when I visit your plant, I will go to your pacemaker processes first, where I will be asking the 5 questions. As you continue to focus on the pacemaker process and strive to achieve successively tighter target conditions there, the causes of obstacles will increasingly lie up or downstream of the pacemaker or even elsewhere in the organization. When conditions in other processes and areas become the obstacles preventing you from achieving the next target condition at the pacemaker, you can migrate to them. This is an elegant way to expand into the value stream, following where the problems lead you, because then you are always working on what you need to work on, and individual improvement efforts tie together. Eventually, you will be striving for target conditions at all processes, but in a connected and concerted way, and as you move into other processes, the value stream mapping tool will prove helpful for understanding and planning how you would like the flow to tie together next. Appendix 2. Process Analysis. The purpose of this appendix is to show you a procedure for analyzing the current condition of a production process. This is done to help obtain the facts and data you need in order to define an appropriate process target condition. I have used this process analysis on a wide variety of production processes, some more automated and some less automated. In some cases, adjustments will be necessary in order to fit the analysis to the characteristics of a particular type of process, but the basic concept as presented here is usually about the same. The purpose of the process analysis is not to uncover problems or potential improvements, but to grasp the current process condition and obtain the facts and data you need for establishing an appropriate next process target condition. This is an important point. This is not a hunt for waste in the process. Going through the steps of this process analysis is intended to force you to look into and confront the details of a process so you can define how the process should be operating. Once you have a target condition, then you can strive to move toward it, ask the 5 questions, and identify what you need to work on. The process analysis and establishing a target condition takes some time, but once a target condition has been established, the coaching cycles can be frequent and short. Try practicing the steps of this process analysis, establishing a target condition, and applying the rest of the improvement kata. Once you understand the thinking and pattern behind this process analysis, you may well decide to modify it to better suit your environment. Start with the value stream. Improvement happens at the process level, but conducting at least a value stream scan is a prerequisite before conducting a process analysis and establishing a first target condition. Such a scan helps you understand the overall flow from dock to dock and to identify the segments or loops of a value stream. A value stream scan often does not take too much time, typically 1 day or less. Do not try to get all the details, just a basic overview of the value stream by asking the questions below. You can add detail to this value stream map later as you begin to gain a deeper understanding of the pacemaker process. Questions for a value stream scan. Number 1. Which value stream, product family, have you selected? Number 2. What are the processing steps? Number 3. Is the process dedicated, D, or shared, S? Number 4. At what points along the value stream is inventory kept? Number 5. How does each process know what to produce, information flow? Number 6. At what processes are changeovers needed? What is the changeover time, current lot size, current number of changeovers per day, and the estimated EPEI at those processes? Every product, every interval. This is the interval of time over which a process produces every high-volume product it makes. Number 7. What are the loops in this value stream? Which loop is the pacemaker loop? See Appendix 1 for an explanation of the pacemaker process, or loop. Number 8. With a 1 to 2 year time horizon in mind, where do you think one-by-one flow should be possible? Do you think inventory should be replaced with a pull or FIFO system? Now focus on one process in the value stream. You are now dropping down from the value stream level to the process level to conduct the process analysis. Start at the pacemaker loop and stay focused on it. Often this means you'll be analyzing an assembly or similar process. There is a logic behind the order of these steps. However, the effort quickly becomes iterative. As you move through the analysis, you will have to go back and review or recalculate an earlier step based on what you are learning as you move forward. This is normal. You are trying to get a deep understanding of the current condition. Steps of process analysis. Assess customer demand and determine line pace, customer tact, plan cycle time. First impressions of the process. Get to know the process by sketching a block diagram of it. Is there a one-by-one flow? Are each operator's work steps the same from cycle to cycle? Is line output consistent? Is machine capacity sufficient? Can the equipment support the planned cycle time? What is current capacity? How many shifts? Is the process stable? Time 20 to 40 full cycles of each operator's work. What is the necessary number of operators if the process were stable? Calculate number of operators. The only equipment you need to conduct a process analysis is a stopwatch that measures seconds, graph paper, pencil, eraser, calculator. Do not forget shop floor courtesy. Approach the process via the team leader or supervisor. Introduce yourself. Explain what you are doing. Do not interrupt the operators while they are working. Explain that you are watching the work, not the operator. People will not believe you when you say this, but if it is what is in your heart, eventually they will. Show any notes you've taken. Say thank you before you leave. Perhaps keep your hands out of your pockets on the shop floor. People are working hard here, and hands in pockets sends a too casual message. A better message is, we are all working hard for the customer. Assess customer demand and determine line pace. Here are two numbers you should know. Number one, tact time, TT, also known as customer tact, the customer demand rate. Number two, planned cycle time, PCT, the target production rate, which is different from the customer demand rate, usually faster as it accommodates changeover time and perhaps some downtime. Tact time, TT. This is the rate of customer demand for the group of products produced by a process. Tact time is calculated by dividing the effective operating time of a process by the quantity of items customers require from the process in that operating time. Effective operating time is the available time minus planned downtimes such as lunches, breaks, team meetings, cleanup, and planned maintenance. Unplanned downtime and changeover times are not subtracted because they are variables we want to reduce. Planned cycle time, PCT. Once you have calculated tact, then also subtract changeover time and perhaps other losses such as unplanned downtime and scrap and rework rates from the operating time to arrive at the planned cycle time, PCT. This is the actual speed at which the line should be running. A. Changeover time. In your first PCT calculation, you can simply use the number of changeovers currently done per day and the total time that currently takes. You can also calculate with other patterns of changeovers and changeover times in order to explore different scenarios. B. Downtime. There are two kinds of downtime, short stoppages throughout the day that add up, and rarer but longer-lasting catastrophic failures. In calculating PCT, we are concerned with only the small stoppages. You cannot cover for occasional catastrophe with a faster PCT. Toyota subtracts changeover time in calculating PCT, but not unplanned downtime. This is because Toyota factories maintain a time gap after each shift, which is used to make up for small stoppages that occurred during the shift. If you do not currently have that option, then you will probably have to accommodate for some unplanned downtime in calculating the PCT. One tactic is to strive for a PCT that is only 15 or 20% faster than tact, and prescribe that changeover time and other losses should be controlled to fit within that 15 or 20% gap. The following simple capacity analysis using the L-shaped stack chart is an exceptionally useful tool for calculating planned cycle time, which you should master. In the stack, show each category of losses individually, rather than, for example, combining them in an OEE figure, overall equipment effectiveness. This way you can better understand the issues. Start with a one-day interval to make the PCT calculation. If you are seeking PCT, calculate down. If the PCT is fixed, say because of an unchangeable machine cycle, then calculate up. Use the optimal changeover sequence to minimize total changeover loss. Always put changeover time at the top of the stack. First impressions of the process. What do you see? Get to know the process by trying to sketch a block diagram of it. Draw a straight line sketch of the workstations in the process. Do not draw to scale or worry about the shape, the layout, of the line. Each box equals one workstation or machine. This sketch can get messy as you see deeper and deeper into the process. That's okay. Now observe the process and try to answer the following three questions. Write down your observations. You can ask questions, but do not interview people. learn to see and understand for yourself. Is there a one-by-one flow? Do parts move directly from one value-adding step to the next? Are each operator's work steps the same from cycle to cycle? Is output consistent at the end of the process? Use a stopwatch to time 20 successive cycles at the output end of the process. Select a point and time how often a part comes by this point. Chart the individual times. Do not calculate or use averages. Check machine capacity. What is meant here by machines is automatic equipment that runs even if an operator walks away. A drill press that is operated by a person, for example, is not automatic. A drilling machine that drills by itself after a person unloads and loads it is automatic. The questions we are trying to answer with this step of the process analysis are, number one, can the automatic equipment in this process meet the planned cycle time? Number two, what is the fastest planned cycle time that the automatic equipment can currently support? This is current process capacity. Theoretically, an automatic machine's cycle time has to be right at or faster than the planned cycle time. For example, if the planned cycle time for a process is 20 seconds, then the automated machines in the process would need to go through their full cycle in 20 seconds or less. In practice, however, this is not quite correct. Every machine has a certain small fluctuation from cycle to cycle. Sometimes the time to unload and load the machine varies slightly, or the machine cycle itself varies a small amount. Due to this personality of machines, a close-coupled one-by-one flow will not be sustainable if any of the automated machines in it require the full PCT interval to complete their cycle. In a one-by-one flow, if one machine goes over the planned cycle time, then this variation can telegraph up and downstream and disrupt the one-by-one flow. For this reason, automatic machines should finish their cycle a little before the planned cycle time is up, at the latest. A guideline, only a guideline, is that the total machine cycle time for any automated equipment in a one-by-one flow should be no longer than about 90% of the planned cycle time. This guideline applies only to machines, not operators. Operator work should ideally be filled up to the planned cycle time. Insufficient machine capacity is a showstopper issue. If machine capacity is insufficient, then you must address this first before going on and making other improvements, because in that situation, other improvement efforts will not stick. We must provide the factory floor with a process that is capable of supporting the planned cycle time. Interpretation of the machine capacity chart. The first thing a machine capacity chart shows is if you have any equipment that currently cannot support the planned cycle time. This must be addressed before going on. Tactics for dealing with this obstacle fall in three successive categories, the first category being preferable to the next, and so on. Number one, category one, true improvement. Work hard to achieve this before going on to the next category. Shorten unload and load time. Reduce the gap between tack time and planned cycle time, which makes the PCT slower. Find capacity in the machine cycle. For example, reduce empty machine cycle time, such as cutting air. How much of the machine's cycle time is actually spent processing? Split up multifunction machines if this can be done inexpensively. Single-function machines have more capacity. Make machine and unload load times occur in parallel. For example, put the part fixtures on a turntable so the operator can unload and load while the machine is running and processing another part. Speed up the machine. Quality cannot be compromised. Number two, category two. Compensating, not true improvement. Add a small standard work-in-process buffer up and downstream of the machine to isolate its personality from the rest of the one-by-one flow. This only works if the total machine cycle time is at or below the planned cycle time. Move work to other processes, which slows down the tack time and planned cycle time for this process. Number three, category three, buy more capacity, the last resort option. A Toyota person once told me, if we are resourceful and creative, we can almost always find ways to get more capacity out of a machine. Is the process stable? When you start applying the improvement kata to a production process, as well as again and again after process changes are made, the target condition often includes establishing cycle stability. Process stability, or lack of it, is another showstopper issue. If a process is not stable, you need to address this before trying to make other improvements, because without a stable process, further improvements will often not stick. Whenever production processes are unstable, especially pacemaker processes, the entire organization, shop floor, administration, planning, logistics, sales and after-sales service, customers, etc., will experience waves of fluctuation, variation, and extra activities. The total extra effort and cost generated by this variation in production is called the hidden factory. The extra expense is not measurable because there are too many intangibles, but such variation has been estimated to add 20 to 30% to cost. The more stable and level you can get your processes, the leaner the entire organization can be. Note that a stable process does not mean there are no problems, but that the process operates in a consistent manner from cycle to cycle. Time 20 to 40 cycles of each operator's work. You can check process stability by measuring individual cycles, hourly output, and daily output. The most revealing of these measures is individual cycles from one piece to the next, because it is a process metric that makes process details visible. Fluctuation in hourly output is also interesting, but it is determined after the fact, and fluctuation in total output from day to day is only an outcome metric, that is, simply too coarse and too late for process improvement. To check process stability, time 20 to 40 successive cycles of line output and do the same for each operator's work. Graph the results, including lines for the tack time and planned cycle time. Time full cycles. Select a single reference point in the cycle for starting and stopping your stopwatch, and let the stopwatch run until the operator returns to this point in the cycle. Distinguish between work cycle time and waiting time as much as possible, and graph the work cycle time. Finally, do not use averages, because they conceal instability. On this graph, you should also note the lowest repeatable work cycle time for each operator, which is a figure you will use in the next step. What is the necessary number of operators if the process were stable? The more unstable a process, the more extra operators it will need in order to make target output. Unfortunately, overstaffing a process leads to even greater inconsistency, as lightly loaded operators naturally, and with the best intentions, assist one another with problems, work ahead to build batches, and work differently from cycle to cycle. Such increased variability actually generates more problems and makes understanding the causes of problems even more difficult, a vicious cycle. Keep in mind, however, that if you operate even a stable process with a correct number of operators, you will need to have a way of responding quickly from outside the line when problems occur. See Chapter 7. Problems will happen. Calculate the number of operators. Determining the necessary number of operators for a process involves measuring the total operator work time required to process one piece from start to finish. This can be done by watching and timing each operator's work and adding the times together. Avoid standard timetables here, as they take you away from observing the real situation. There is also a quicker and simpler way, which is sufficient for this process analysis. Simply use the lowest repeatable operator work cycle times from the 20 to 40 cycle graphs of the previous step. In this process analysis, the initial operator times you use do not need to be exact, because you will quickly notice imbalances, overlooked wait times, and problems, and adjust as you work toward the target condition and carry out PDCA cycles. Do not waste time trying to obtain and agree upon perfectly accurate operator times now, up front, because the situation will change anyway as soon as you start taking steps toward the target condition. Summarizing the current condition. One purpose of the process analysis is to make you spend time observing the real situation at the process, and the information and data you have obtained at this point may be sufficient for outlining a first target condition for this process. You may see what would be an appropriate next target condition and be anxious to start working toward it. However, be sure to make a simple written summary of the current condition before you start to define the next target condition. This is Todd Belcher for McGraw-Hill Professional. Thank you for listening. This audiobook is copyrighted in 2017 in the name of Rother & Company, LLC, and is based upon the book Toyota Kata by Mike Rother, copyrighted in 2010 by Rother & Company, LLC. To purchase other McGraw-Hill Professional audiobooks, please visit Amazon.com. To purchase other McGraw-Hill Professional products, please visit our website at mhprofessional.com.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.